Thanks for listening to Schlereth than Evans On Demand, brought to you by Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. If you're in the market for replacement windows, there's only one place to turn. That's Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. Visit them online at windowsforyourhome.com.
Are you ready?
Let's clear the air with Mark Schlereth.
He's gone from suck to blow.
What?
All right, guys. Well, it comes down to this. The subcommittee is going to meet here for the Hall of Fame, and Pat Bowlen's name is on the subcommittee's vote. And it is time to get Pat Bowlen in the Hall of Fame. And I think, you know, his record speaks for itself. 34 years in ownership, average 10.2 wins per season, a 602 winning percentage. But more than that, it was what he did for the TV revenue, what he's done for this league, the behind-the-scenes work he did to take this league to the next level when he took over in the early 90s, making about $1.3 billion as a league a year, now over almost $14 billion, and he was instrumental in putting those deals together. I told you guys this earlier, and I want to tell you this story again. I'm sitting in the Fox meetings getting ready for last season, calling games my first season, when David Hill, the guy who was in charge of Fox Sports at the time, took over in 1994, sat and told us the whole story of how Fox got into the NFL game. And if you remember, back in that time, back in 94, Fox was only in about 60% of American households. And the mainstay owners, the guys, the old school guys, the Art Modells of the world, went ballistic. Like, there's no way we can get into business with the Fox. They're, you know, a younger demographic and they're only in 60% of the households. But it was Pat Bowlen, the vision that Pat Bowlen had for the league, for the television revenue, the vision that he had along with Jerry Jones to put this thing into place, to get into business with Fox, to basically change the way the viewers watched NFL football. That is 100% on Pat Bowlen. You think about that. Ebersol, head of NBC forever, said Pat Bowlen was instrumental in bringing Sunday Night Football into the realm. And that's the number one rated program in television every year, Sunday Night Football. So it is time for the subcommittee to get it right, finally. And I understand what Jerry Jones has done for the league. I get it. But Pat Bowlen has been, Jerry Jones may be the face and the forefront of it, but Pat Bowlen was the engine inside, they got it done. You know, Pat, look at it. There's, you know, there's the beautiful big race car, and you see how gorgeous that car is, and that's the front of that is, you know, that's Jerry Jones. What makes that car go, the actuator, the engine, that was actually Pat Bowlen. And so it is time for them to vote Pat Bowlen in, and you know what? This is going to be the year. Pat Bowlen gets into the Hall of Fame, and I, for one, can't wait for that announcement to be made. So I don't even have a cleats on the grass for you. Just give me a cleats on the grass.
That was awesome.
Clear the air with Mark Schlereth.
Yeah, it's past time to get this thing done. Cecil Lammy filling in for Mike Evans this week on Schlereth and Evans. And it's past time not only for what he did for the league, and we can go through that, and certainly what Hill's told you, what Dick Ebersol has said about Pat Bowlen. But just for this franchise, for this city, we have royalty in Denver, and it's the Bowlen family. And Mr. Bowlen and how much he cares about Broncos country. You know what a poorly run organization looks like, Stink, and you know what a well-run organization looks like. And we're fortunate, and I've always said Broncos fans are spoiled, to be Broncos fans, because they're one of the best run organizations in the league.
They are, they have been under Pat Bowlen's tutelage. I tell you guys all the time, you know, just when Alfred and I and everybody was playing there, and you know, certainly guys played there a lot longer than I did, you know, and way before I did, but I was always impressed with after game days, like Mondays after game days. And, you know, I mean, the training room is like oftentimes like a triage unit, you know, everybody's just beat to a pulp and everybody's packed in ice. And, you know, there are certain injuries. Some of them are just, you know, week to week. Some of them are just day injuries or whatever. Some of them are significant injuries. But Pat Bowlen always down there with Mike Shanahan and with Greek, and essentially saying, okay, what do we got? You know, how many injuries do we have? Like what kind of significant injuries do we have, and what do I need to do? Like, who do we need to go find? Do we need to go get somebody? I mean, he was down there all the time. He, and it was, it wasn't, it wasn't fake. It wasn't just business. I mean, he cared about the players. And you know what? And he cared about winning, and it sets him apart. And you know, as simple as that seems or as simple as that sounds, Cecil, there are a lot of guys, a lot of owners in this league that don't. Right? What they care about is the fact that the franchise grows in value, you know, 12% a year or whatever it is.
Right.
And that's what they care about. And hey, if winning is a byproduct, if you catch lightning in a bottle, if you win one season and everybody gets hope and there's excitement, great. But if not, that's okay. As long as our revenues and as long as everything keeps going on and keeps going up and my franchise continues to gain in value, then I'm okay with that.
Just look at the Broncos compared to the other teams in this great city. And while the mindsets are different for every sport, and I understand that. But, you know, we're excited about this run the Rockies are making. We should be, mm-hmm. right? 51-45, sure. Handing the break. We should be. But is anyone saying World Series or bust? No. The Nuggets, we'd be happy if they were an 8th seed again, you know, like they were with George Karl forever. Like, that's their expectations.
Right.
When you look at the Broncos, it's true. Oh, yeah, AFC West championship. That's nice. That's nice. Where's the Super Bowl at?
Here's the deal. Just look at our own division, okay? In our own division. Raiders want a new stadium. You know where they got to go? To Vegas. Right?
Right.
Okay, listen to the difference between Bronco Country and Chargers. The Spanos family had a plan to build a new stadium in San Diego. So here's how this whole thing goes down. Okay, you want to build a stadium. Okay? Cecil, what if I told you, I'm going to build you a house. It's going to be free of charge. It's not going to cost you a thing. Just, you know, every now and again, you're going to have a guest house attached to it. And every now and again, friends of mine are going to come and stay at the guest house. That's all that's required of you. That's like once a month, some guests are going to stay there just for the weekend. They're, you know, and then they're going to leave.
Where do I sign?
Yeah. But I'm going to build you a $1 million house. It was that whole project was going to be funded on an extra fee for hotel guests in San Diego, meaning that out of town guests are going to build you a stadium. The whole funding project, and the people of San Diego can't stand the Spanos family so much that they wouldn't vote it in. And I mean, can you imagine? Broncos country basically saying we're so sick of our ownership that we're not going to vote for the biggest no-brainer of all time, an extra tax on out-of-town guests. Right? I mean,
right.
That's essentially what it boiled down to. And they couldn't get that done. Like, that would never happen in Denver, Colorado. Never.
Make the push, and finally, subcommittee who meets August 23rd in Canton, Ohio, get this right. Stink, it's past time, but now is the time. We have to get Pat Bowlen into the Hall of Fame, and this next year's got to be it.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. And you know what? And obviously his failing health, it shouldn't play into it, Cecil. It should have never been. It shouldn't have come down to this point, but it
right.
should never played into it. But it is time. You're 100% right.
The hottest team in all of Major League Baseball is your Colorado Rockies, but history shows us something about this team after the All-Star break that is not going to make you feel good. That's next. All-Star break in Major League Baseball means one thing for Rockies fans, Stink. It means panic. It means, oh no, here we go again. Even though this team enters the All-Star break 51-45, even though they've won 12 of their last 15, even though they've won their last five series, and even though they're only two games back of the division leading Dodgers, it just seems like history has shown us time and time again, this All-Star break can throw off any momentum the Rockies have built.
Yeah, it's always one of those scary things, although I think, you know, obviously they have a lot of momentum. There's a lot of reasons. They've been pitching exceptionally well. Their starting pitching has gone deep. they've done good enough out of the bullpen just to save, you know, to make sure they save victories. Getting a walk-off from Trevor Story yesterday to win 4-3. But, you know, you look at what they've done here, and it really has come down, more than anything, it's come down to their starting pitching. And, you know, I understand that one Arizona win was, you know, 19-2. But after that, it's 5-1, 10-7, 4-1, 4-3, 5-1, 7-1 the week before, 1-0, 8-1, 5-2. So they've gotten great starting pitching. That's been the first thing, to eliminate some of the big time, you know, lopsided scores on the defensive end. But, you know, they've produced runs as well during this streak. And, you know, like I said, Story is been, gosh, I don't even know what he's hit in the month of June, July. He's just been on fire. So he's doing a great job. Anyhow, momentum is great. Really, momentum's all about, you know, how your starter pitches. If your starter pitches well and takes you deep, you know, good things are going to happen to you more often than not. And that's really what they've been getting. More than anything, that's what they've been getting. And so I think when you know your starter's going to get you six and give up, you know, have a quality start, three or less, to get you through six, well, I think it takes some of the pressure off you when you're at the dish. You don't squeeze quite as tight. You let the pitches come to you as opposed to trying to force it. And they've got to be able to maintain that kind of, that kind of philosophical approach to the game.
Philosophical approach, but also mental edge. They need to maintain that mental edge. So with the number of games and just kind of the nature of this game, you fail more than you succeed. How do they do that? Is momentum the most difficult to maintain in Major League Baseball compared to the other major sports?
Yeah, you know.
It has to be, right?
Right. I think so, Cecil. I mean, I think, I think that just momentum in general, it's all incredibly important. Having that feel, playing for one another. And you know, I've always said this just about playing in general. In anything, any walk of life, when you're doing it for somebody bigger than yourself, you know, when you're doing it for, you're making sacrifices and it's not just about you anymore, but it's bigger than that. That's when you're going to start having, you know, the fun and the success and the momentum. And when it becomes that important to you to not let your teammates down, to not let your organization down, to not let, you know, your family down, all that kind of stuff. That's when I think momentum is more attainable or sustainable, I guess is probably the right word.
When you look at the Colorado Rockies, everyone's excited about this win streak. You want to make sure that they maintain that momentum. And, well, you mentioned it. Like, hey, they're getting enough from the bullpen. Can that continue? I mean, that's the biggest Achilles heel of this team all season long. They got a little bit of a spark here. A little bit. How does that maintain when it's been their biggest question mark all year long?
Yeah, well, I mean, it maintains if there's a couple guys you can trust, right? You can trust Ottavino.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's one guy you can trust, but Orbuch has played better. Wade Davis will be fine. You know, Wade Davis is a really outstanding player. And so, you know, I think you look at those guys, you can trust those guys out of the bullpen. Then it comes down to managing your bullpen, making sure you only use guys in low leverage situations. I think that's an important part of it. But the way there's one guy that's going to be key. And he's been a guy that we've been waiting to be an ace forever. And that's John Gray. And we keep saying ace stuff, ace stuff, ace stuff. He has occasional ace type of performance, and then, you know, he struggles at times. But if you can continue to get the kind of starts you've gotten out of Tyler Anderson, who has been outstanding, you continue to get the kind of starts you get out of Kyle Freeland, who's been outstanding, and if John Gray can give you, if he can give you the kind of performance he gave you just the other day, you're going to be okay. Because if you can get those performances out of those particular guys, you know, then you're talking an opportunity to be really good. John Gray the other day was magnificent. You know, he was just absolutely outstanding the other day. And that's the kind of, you know, that's the kind of performance you're going to need out of him, coupled with the fact that, you know, right now you're talking about two other guys that are giving you deep innings. And so, what was John Gray the other day? 7 1/3 innings, that he threw. I mean, he was really outstanding. And so that's the kind of performances. If you can get those kind of performances out of John Gray, you got a great chance to do some special stuff. And that's, you know, that's what it's going to take. So his line the other day, 7 1/3, 5 hits, 1 run, 1 earned run, 1 base on balls, 6 Ks. But those are the type of things, those are the type of performances that you need. You know, when you're not walking dudes, when you're, you know, I watched him in a AAA start and I was telling Mike, you know, there was a bunch of times, I think 5 or 6 times he had a 0-2 count on a guy, and I think twice he gave up walks and he gave up 3 hits. And I think it was 7 0-2 counts and he gave up 5 base runners on 7 0-2 counts. Like, and that was, you know, that was a minor league start where he went, I think 4 1/3. You just, like, you got to be able to close the deal, especially when you got his kind of stuff. And that to me is more of a mental approach, and it's hard. And this is one of the hardest games there is. And if he can continue to have those kind of performances like he did against the Mariners the other day, coupled with, like I said, Freeland, what he's been doing, and Tyler Anderson, what he's been doing, you've got a pretty solid 1-2-3 punch of your starting rotation.
How about your fourth punch here then, Stink? Because we're talking about history, spark, and momentum with your Colorado Rockies. Well, history's shown us, and even Nolan Arenado's alluded to this, like, hey, you're not going to do anything in the trade deadline. How about that? How about adding a spark via the trade deadline to maintain this momentum or add to this positive energy the Rockies have built?
Yeah, you know, it would be nice. I would love to see them, you know, if they're, and I don't know, I just don't know who's out there from a starting pitching standpoint or even a relief. You know, is there a reliever out there? Is there somebody that can help fortify the Colorado Rockies? And if there is, you know, are you willing to make, they did it a couple years ago, right? They did it last year at the trade deadline. But, you know, are you willing, are you going to stand pat because you've got some momentum, or are you willing to make a move? And, you know, and that was Nolan Arenado's, that was his biggest thing, is who, like, what are we going to do? Are we going to do anything? And, you know, so that would be, I guess that would be my big question. You know, I know there are guys out there, like, I don't know, Chris Archer of the Rays has been rumored. Fulmer of the Tigers has been rumored. Hamill of the Rangers has been rumored. You know, there are people out there that, you know, that we're talking about Madison Bumgarner. I don't think that's going to happen, but those are some of the starting pitching names that have been out there. Will any of those guys become available? I don't know. Or are there relievers out there that, would make more sense? But I'd love to see them fortify it. You know, I'd love to see them go after somebody if that is in case, you know, something they'd be willing to do, because I think it would be incredibly helpful.
It's time for Jeff Bridger to start working the phones. That's the bottom line for the Colorado Rockies and keep this thing going. You've gone through some rough times this year, but now you've seen a spark. You've seen some positivity coming from that team. Let's maintain it out there at Coors Field. Speaking of getting deals done, Le'Veon Bell and other franchise tag players, well, there's some breaking news about which direction they're going and the deadline for franchise tag players, which is today. We'll tell you about it next.
Are you ready for some football?
This is Four Down Territory.
Words cannot say how much I truly love you.
Donkey Kong Sue.
Double team, leaping high, falling hard.
Yo soy fiesta.
Hurry, hurry.
On Sports Radio 104.3, The Fan. First down.
I wish he would go because I really believe, and I told him this too. I said, T.O., I may be dead and gone. I said, but I believe when you're 70 years old, you'll look back, maybe even sooner, and say, man, you know, I wish I would have went. But, you know, no matter what, I still stick by him. You know, I support him. He's in the Hall of Fame, well-deserving of it. Should have been in first time.
There's Eric Dickerson on Terrell Owens and his Hall of Fame boycott, really. Others, Michael Irvin and others, siding with the Hall of Fame over T.O. So, Stink, where do you yourself weigh into this Terrell Owens Hall of Fame conversation?
I think one, it's the greatest honor as a individual that you can get. You know, the Hall of Fame, the Pro Football Hall of Fame. There are plenty of players that were better. There are plenty of players that were more committed to, you know, to team. There are plenty of players that also have multiple Super Bowl rings that had to wait. And what makes you think you shouldn't have to wait? I think he's making a huge mistake. I think he should go. I think, you know, he's being a petulant child about it. You know, I mean, maybe you should have to wait simply because you don't have any rings. How about that? I mean, it's always interesting to me, like, you're going to make a statement. You're the guy making a statement. You know, the guy that played for five or six other teams that basically got run off of every one of them because of, you know, what a nuisance he was at times. You're the one that's going to stand up for the rest of the players and make a statement. You know, stop it. Nobody's listening to you. You know what? Look over your shoulder. You think you're a leader? Look over your shoulder. Nobody's following you? Probably not very much of a leader.
It just reminds me, this whole Terrell Owens, like, I'm standing up for the guys who had to wait. It reminds me of the line from Friday. You ain't got so lie to kick it, Craig. Mm-hmm. You ain't got so lie to kick it. You know why? This isn't about them. It's not about the people who had to wait. T.O., it's about you.
Right.
It's always been about you. And that's what people like the Hall of Fame committee, they're probably sick of that. So it doesn't have to be about you. This is about going in and being honored at the highest level.
Yeah. I'm making a statement for everybody who's had to wait. Stop it.
Good luck with that.
You're making a statement for yourself.
Next in four down territory.
Second down.
I've decided to retire from the game of football. It's been great. It's been a great 7 years of my career. I've been very blessed to have had the coaching staffs and the players and the teammates that I've been fortunate enough to play with for the last 7 years of my career. And it's been a long time thinking, the last year or two, and physically, mentally, emotionally, I think it's time for me to, you know, hang it up. It's as hard as it is, bittersweet, but I think for me it's the right timing for myself and my family moving forward.
There's DeMarco Murray talking about his retirement from the National Football League. And Stink, there goes the in case of emergency break glass. You got your middle-ish of June guy at quarterback. Mm-hmm. I had a middle-ish of June guy at running back because, listen, Devontae Booker, there's 3.6 a carry. He's not sneaky good, VJ, pretty much. And Royce Freeman, love him, but, you know, a rookie. And the middle-ish of June running back was always like, if these running backs don't look good in training camp, you can always go get DeMarco Murray. Well, he's retired now, Stink.
Well, yeah, now he's retired. But will he continue to be retired? You know, that's...
Can he be unretired?
Yeah. And a lot of times, guys, you know, I mean, I've known guys who that was part of their that was part of their summer program. Let me retire so I make sure I don't have to go to camp. And then let me roll in, you know, after the first week of the season or whatever. And then your contract, if you sign a guy after the first week, it's not fully guaranteed for the year. So that's another one that NFL teams will look at and say, all right, well, do we need a running back and can we kick the tires on DeMarco Murray and see if, I mean, it's 7 years and I understand you take a beating, and you've made good money, but it's been only 7 years. And if you're fresh week one and you need a guy, you know, then if that guy's keeping himself in shape, I could definitely see, you know, teams reaching out to him and just gauging his interest.
Next in four down territory.
Third down.
Bell gets the call. Through a hole, down to the five, down to the goal line. Is that a touchdown?
Yes, it is.
Certainly is, Ollie. A scamper of 10 yards, and the Steelers crack open a cushy lead, and look at these terrible towels.
Look at Le'Veon Bell. An extension over the weekend was reportedly close to getting done. Now it may be doubtful. Going to go down to the wire. Ian Rappaport reporting that on Twitter just a few moments ago that the Steelers and Le'Veon Bell negotiated all weekend, but parties aren't optimistic a long-term deal will get done. Expected to go down to the wire. Deals get done at deadlines, stink, and, well, the deadline's today, and it's at 4 p.m. Eastern time.
Right. And Le'Veon, you know, I mean, it just is interesting because that guy is so good. He's so patient. He, you know, he's just, he's a wide receiver that plays running back. He's the most patient running back I've ever seen. Sets up his blocks probably better than anybody I've ever seen. You know, and he's always one of those guys to me that never takes the big hit either for the most part. Although he has had some injury stuff and he's been suspended, you know, for marijuana violations. So there are some, you know, there are some things you got to be careful with. But again, I think it's just one of those things that goes to show you, Cease, is that the value of the running back position, how nobody wants to pay. DeMarco Murray doesn't help. 7 years in, I'm done. I got cut, I'm done. Right? It just, the value of the running back position has been diminished because of the beating that position seems to take.
And you're not going to double dip, Le'Veon. You're not going to get paid as a wide receiver and as a running back, just like Jimmy Graham wasn't going to get paid as a wide receiver and as a tight end. We'll see if something happens later today at that deadline. Next on Four Down Territory.
Fourth down.
Marcel, this isn't a drill, buddy. You got real sharks here. It's time to get the guns, and it's time to shoot some fish.
Here on Eden, there are no guns.
You got an American life at stake.
Gronk, Aaron Rodgers, Lindsey Vonn, Shaq, Mark Cuban, and Ronda Rousey. There's a dinner party everyone would like to go to. Mm-hmm. Well, they're going to help out with Shark Week, July 22nd to 29th. And, well, everyone just stay safe. Make sure you get your bigger boat.
Yeah, get yourself in the shark tank.
And, bigger boat.
Make sure you don't get nibbled on. Yeah, I watched a little Shark Week yesterday. It is, it's an amazing phenomenon. There's no question.
We're fascinated by the world's ultimate predator.
They are, you know, they're absolutely frightening. And it was amazing watching, some seal attack stuff, you know, just going after, they're pretty scary.
What about you, Stink? Would you ever, jump in the water with these sharks, participate in Shark Week?
Sure. I'm not going to swim with the sharks, you know, or hand feed them like the one girl that was, remember the internet thing?
Just
hand feeding sharks.
Right.
I'm like, no, thank you. I'm not, you know, I'm stupid, but, you know, I'm not that dumb. So I'm not going to hand feed any sharks or, but yeah, would I participate? Would I get in a shark cage? Sure.
Most importantly, what would you wear?
I would wear shark repellent suits. I'd look like a knight in shining armor down there in my shark suit. Don't bite me.
No, stinky good green chili thong, anything like that?
No. I'm gonna be all suited up in my shark repellent suit. That's what I'm doing.
And your diving suit.
Exactly.
Okay. Gonna have any sort of spear gun, anything like that?
Yeah, I'm gonna have everything that you can carry down there, whatever they give you. I want everything.
Spear
gun, you know. Whatever, I'll do a little
mace.
Yeah,
whatever.
Shark mace. whatever they give you, I'm taking it all.
Do it all. That's Mark Schlereth, ladies and gentlemen. No thanks for me in the shark tank. No, thank you. Not gonna happen.
You wouldn't want to get in there a little bit.
Nope.
Just like
nope. No, I'll watch it on TV. It's one of those things. Like I'll watch it on TV. I'm scared to watch it on TV. Why would I get in a shark tank?
They are nasty, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
They're just scary.
But you could dispense some justice on them. I know you could.
No, there is no...
Punch them right in the nose.
Right in the... Yeah, you wait for them to come up. You know, I was watching that whole thing because don't they always say, hey, you know, you got to, like, they're sensitive, nose sensitive, you hit them in the nose.
Tap them on the nose, yeah.
I'm watching them ramrod. There's great whites, and this guy's in the shark tank at night, and the great whites are just ramming it, like, with their noses. And I'm like, what happened to all that hey, whack them in the nose. That, you know, makes their eyes water. Do sharks' eyes water, you think, in the water? Would you, how would you know? How would you know if a shark's eyes, if shark eyes are watering, why they're in the water?
The world, eyes.
The world may never know. That's a wrap for Four Down Territory. We got Troy Rank, our Denver 7 Broncos insider, coming up next. And we have to break down who is the most, who's the Broncos player with the most to gain and the most to lose in 2018. We explain next. Counting down to training camp 2018 is Troy Rank, our Denver 7 Broncos insider. Cecil Lammy sitting in for Mike Evans. I'm Schlereth and Evans. Troy is brought to you by Tranny Law. If you or someone you know been charged with a DUI, call for a free consultation, 303-333-1816, online, TRANILaw.com. Troy, good morning. When we discuss which Bronco has the most to gain or lose this year, in your eyes, where is that crux? Who is that one player that perhaps has the most pressure on him to perform in 2018?
Well, again, I state the obvious. It's Case Keenum. I mean, even though this is his first year as a Bronco, if he doesn't play well, the chances of them rebounding nosedive dramatically. So I would say he's, you know, for me, it's just kind of in his own category, Cecil, but he has to play well for the team to play well. But there's other interesting guys that you bring up. Bradley Roby, you know, everything's right in front of him now. Can he show he's an every down quarterback, cornerback, who can be an anchor guy going forward? I think he can, but he's got to prove he can do that, replacing Aqib Talib, and there's a lot of pressure on him. Brandon Marshall is in a situation. Could this be his last year in Denver? And he's lost some weight to improve himself in coverage. I mean, I love the guy personally, but I mean, it's a big year for him. Where does he go from here? Derek Wolfe coming back from injury. Can he be the guy he was during the Super Bowl seasons now that he's finally healthy again, and he's clearly healthy, happy, smiling again, his back and neck feel so, especially his neck feeling so much better. So I think there's a lot of guys, and a rookie, I mean, let's take Chubb out of it, kind of like Keenum is in his own category. Royce Freeman, can he become the starting running back as a rookie, and how would that offense look differently if you have a guy behind you you can trust to be a little bit of a bell cow as a rookie?
Yeah, 52 days left until the open of the NFL season before kickoff. Any big thing you're thinking about going into this last 52 days before they go to the regular season? There's only a few days left before training camp, but like, what are some of the biggest things that that need to happen in your mind for this to be a successful kind of kickoff to the season?
Well, again, Mark, for me, you and I have talked about it. It starts with the offense. Can the offense be adequate? And that, the deeper dive in that is, what is the line going to look like? And Jared Beldier, you know, Pro Football Focus ranked all the lines. And I mean, people have their different opinions of Pro Football Focus. I get it. But in evaluating offensive linemen, at least it's one tool that's different than, hey, a guy, I think he's playing well. They like the acquisition of Jared Beldier more than most. And they have the Broncos line ranked, I think, 18th overall, up like six spots from a year ago. And their point was, in Valdir's first, I think, three starts at right tackle last year for the Cardinals, he gave up, like 20 pressures and then essentially like 10 pressures the rest of the way, the rest of the season. So if they get that guy and it solidifies right tackle, all of a sudden, you know, again, then this offense that has been a huge problem, last in the red zone for efficiency last year, second to worst quarterback play. I mean, go down the list. It was just mind numbing how bad they've been the last couple of years. All of a sudden, if the line steadies and you got a quarterback, okay, then you got something. And then, for me, tight end's a huge position, Mark. Is Jake Butt the guy? I think he can be. I don't know if he can do it in his first year in the pros after missing last year. But if he's a guy in the middle of the field, or Deshaun Hamilton in the middle of the field, or threats, can this offense that we keep saying is going to get better finally take off?
Troy Ranker, Denver 7 Broncos insider, joining Schlereth and Evans. And doesn't this team feel, or just this situation, Troy, because rewind a year ago, you know, we got the decision, we got the t-shirts printed up, and everyone's like, who's it going to be? Doesn't it feel more settled this year? Here we are, whatever, 12 days away from the start of training camp, where there's a calming effect. It's what I call the Case Keenum effect that's fully in place. We don't have to worry about quarterback competition this year.
I agree. See, so again, you can have competition at almost every position, but when you have it at quarterback back-to-back years, it's not healthy for the locker room. It's not healthy for the quarterback. when you're like, you're the leader, you're the guy, and then you're looking over your shoulder. It's almost impossible to be the guy if you don't know you're the guy. I mean, that's just the reality of that. So competition is great, and it does typically bring out the best in athletes, guys who are type A. I get that. But at quarterback, the sooner you know who your starter is going to be, the better off you are, especially for a struggling team. And now you can start forming identity offensively. I mean, if one thing that drove me crazy the last couple of years, Cecil, covering this team, no offensive identity. I mean, I kind of half joke, but they're shrugged shoulders, tan dockers, that's their identity. You don't know who, they're just nothing there, blah. You know, they run the ball okay. They don't pass particularly well. They don't have a physical identity. They're not even a finesse fast team. So who are they offensively? And that starts with knowing who your quarterback is. And if Keenum is anything resembling who he was last year, that'll be a dramatic improvement.
Well, since you brought up who are they, let me go ahead and switch topics for a second. The Rockies. I mean, this is an impressive run. We talked about this thing going in with Arizona and the Giants and the Dodgers and two series against the Mariners, and they won, what, five of six games with the Mariners? Is this a sustainable run? I know they've gotten great starting pitching here down this stretch, and they've put up some offensive numbers. Is this sustainable? Can they make a push to win this division long-term here without doing anything, I guess?
Well, here's what's sustainable about it for me, using history as our guide, Mark. They can win a lot of games in a row at home. They can dominate at home, and that's what's changed the season. Their road record has been great all year. But typically, you're gonna end up with 41 to 45 road wins. I mean, that's just where it falls. Now, there might be an aberration in there, but their franchise best was last year, 41. I mean, so you can't say you're gonna throw out 46, 47 road wins. Now they're finally 500 at home, Mark. They've won, I believe, if memory serves, 12 of their last 15 at Coors Field. They're 500 at home with the schedule in front of them when they come back out of the All-Star break. And when they're right, they can beat anybody at home. And that's why when you say, is it sustainable? Can they get to 47, 48 home wins? If they can, then you're right at that number, 88 to 91. And so I don't know about winning the division. I would never pick them to win the division because they've never done it in the history of the franchise. But to get into the wild card and host that wild card game, and you're playing great at home the last 2.5 months of the season, and that's something. And I think, again, it's easy for me to spend somebody else's money. The players made a statement when they were challenged by management, when they were 4-under at San Francisco. Nolan Arenado spoke up. The players made a statement here. I think management needs to go get them a seventh-inning reliever now. And I get it. You spent $106 million. It didn't work. But this team should have earned your trust over the last 2.5 weeks that they're in it, to stay in it. Go get them a seventh-inning reliever.
Make it happen. He's Troy Rank, our Denver 7 Broncos and Rockies insider, brought to you by Tranny Law. If you or someone you know been charged with a DUI, call for a free consultation, 303-333-1816, or online at TRANILaw.com. Follow Troy on Twitter, at Troy Rank. Troy, be good, and training camp right around the corner, brother. We'll see you soon.
You got it, guys. Looking forward to it. Take care.
All right. There we have him, Troy Rank. And he mentioned it, Stink. There he said, go get it right now. Make a move at the trade deadline. Will the Rockies kind of buck the recent trend of sitting on their hands?
Yeah, it'd be interesting if they would do it. And I'm with Troy. You know, like I said, you've got three guys in that starting rotation right now. If John Gray, truly can be what he was the other day, if he can be consistent. But you know, you've got Herrera with the Royals. That's a guy that's rumored. He's got unbelievable stuff. Brad Hand with the Padres. Darren O'Day with the Orioles is a guy that is a submarine-y right-hander that puts up unbelievable numbers every year.
Well, submarine-y? Is that what you said?
Yeah, he's like a submarine or like a little underhand type of guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Submarine-y.
Submarine-y guy. Yeah. So there's some guys out there that certainly can pitch. You know, again, what happens when you get here? It just seems to be an adjustment period like this. You get shell-shocked, you know. I think when you come in for a series, maybe, you know, you get through a series and like, oh, yeah, that wasn't a problem at all. But I think over time, it certainly takes its toll on you. You know, having talk to starting pitchers like Verlander and other guys who come here for just a weekend series, and they're like, you know, we're an American League team. We came in to play the Rockies, and definitely noticed the difference. Like, okay, if the day after you pitch, you know, you're just kind of doing recovery stuff, and the next day you're throwing a light pen, you know, and they'd be like, yeah, it sets me back a whole nother day. I got to push my routine back essentially a day. It just takes more out of you to pitch at altitude. And, you know, whether that's all, you know, physical, whether it's, there's part of it that's mental. I think you roll in for a day as a reliever, you know, and you've got one outing here at Coors Field and you're like, oh yeah, that wasn't too bad. But when you're there every day, and you're counting on, you got to get up in the bullpen, you got to warm yourself up, you got to be ready. It takes its toll on you, man. I think it takes its toll on you big time. So, you know, it's always like, it's been easy, right? We spent a lot of money on Wade Davis, spent a lot of money on Brian Shaw, we spent a lot of money on Jake McGee, we spent a lot of money. And I'm not saying that it's been a total disaster, but at this point, Jake McGee and Brian Shaw, they have not been able to find consistency.
Well, and it's taken some time. That's where I was going with the conversation, Stink, so I'm glad that you went there. They spent the money,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I know a lot of Rockies fans, oh, they're not going to spend the money. They did. They went out and spent the money on the bullpen. It hasn't worked out as planned. It seems to be working out better now, but why the delay? Is it that adjustment in terms of pitching at altitude? Is that adjustment needed when you bring pitchers here to the Mile High City?
Well, I definitely think that there is, you know, the adjustment period. I think the other thing that, you know, that scares you a little bit, is, you know, is it's a confidence issue. And once you get a little rattled, you know, I think it's easy to shake it off the first time, say, oh, you know, that so-and-so got lucky, or so-and-so that, you know, that wasn't my best pitch, or I just made a mistake. But when you consistently go out and you consistently get squared up, then it becomes one of those things, Cecil, as, you know, as a pitcher where you're like, well, why are they seeing the ball so well? Like, what am I doing? I'm not hiding the ball well enough. You know, is there some, you know, mechanical adjustment I need to make? And then that's when it's in your head. You know, it's one thing to be able to go, like, to be a cornerback and get beat deep once, you know, and you're like, all right, you know, he got me, right? He made a great move and I bit on the out and, you know, it was an out and up and, you know, I got beat by 8 yards. Well, that happens. You know, you don't want it to happen, but it happens and you move on. It wasn't, hey, it was a mistake I made. I jumped the route, right? It was a mistake I made.
Right.
But then when it happens over and over and over again, eventually you're like, oh my gosh, I stink, I can't play. And any player who has played for any length of time has been there. To where, you know, you're going out, I've been there where I'm just like, dude, I am horrible. I can't block anybody. Like, I have zero technique and now I'm just going to try to make it a street fight. And see if I can survive, you know. I mean, I've been in that game before.
Wait a second. Have you had to dispense justice on yourself before?
Yeah. Oh,
take us inside the mind of Mark Schlereth dispensing justice on himself.
Yeah, you're like, Lord, just give me the strength to go out there and make this thing. I'm just going to be grabbing. It's all elbows and everything else, man. It is one of those situations where, you know, I think we've all been there where we just didn't have, you know, a lot of confidence. And I think that's what you get into, like with a guy like Brian Shaw. Like, man, that guy hasn't missed the barrel of a bat in 6-8 weeks. And that is one of those things where you start looking at yourself going, man, it's mechanical. I can't push off my, you know, the calf that I had the injury on. I'm not hiding the ball. Where's my release point? Then you're digging through film to look for any little thing. You know, is there anything I can find that changed it? So that's what's going on.
Maintain your confidence.
Maintain your confidence. It's, you know what? Easy to talk about. Sometimes almost impossible to do.